Creativity is good, but innovation is better, especially in the case of business and stakeholders to the business. So the way, what I mean by that is innovation includes the idea of effective utility for users that open up new doors for the user. Creativity, as in this article, is about giving you different, even exciting ideas, but it doesn't necessarily lead to things that make people's lives better, nor necessarily to having stakeholders benefit from the creativity. Now, in art, that's fine, but not when you're in business or providing services for which people are expecting a benefit. Often, the creativity is just great in the mind of the imager or imaginer.
Welcome to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We want to take a moment to thank Guayaki as our new Business Second Opinion sponsor. They brew an enlivening beverage from naturally caffeinated, nourishing leaves from a species of holly that you may know called mate, native to the South American Atlantic rainforest. It contains 24 vitamins, minerals, and 15 amino acids and abundant polyphenols. It's one of my favorite drinks for the 3 p.m. lull that keeps me going through the rest of my day. On top of that, they support community and ecosystem regeneration, bringing together art, music, and celebrations in many locations. Stay up to date on their events at guayaki.com, and we hope you're going to check out their great beverage with your friends and family. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. Ones you may not know you need to be asking, we think you should. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, usually a contrarian opinion, one that's well-tested and proven to give the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout. With me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
All right, Carol, so let's tell the people what's up for today.
Well, you know, I read Harvard Business Review, although I get mad as I read through all the time. And I noticed this pattern of publishing one piece after another, that is all built around a model of some kind. Particularly, they focus a lot on strategic models, this time with how to be creative in strategy, and with a slew of success examples to prove their point, trying to get you to use their model and perhaps bring you them in to help you. So I thought our subject might be a next step. We built on this in the last two podcasts, but another level down on how to assess these models that are given to you that are offered based on some process they use to construct the model.
So I noticed the title of today is Strategy Needs Creativity from the Harvard Business Review. Are we going to criticize that idea of creativity?
Well, not exactly. Creativity is good, but innovation is better, especially in the case of business and stakeholders to the business. So the way, what I mean by that is innovation includes the idea of effective utility for users that open up new doors for the user. Creativity, as in this article, is about giving you different, even exciting ideas, but it doesn't necessarily lead to things that make people's lives better, nor necessarily to having stakeholders benefit from the creativity. Now, in art, that's fine, but not when you're in business or providing services for which people are expecting a benefit. Often, the creativity is just great in the mind of the imager or imaginer.
Yeah, if I recall, this is where the personal tech industry got super stuck early on. Great ideas were all pre-stuffed essentially into each device, which we now know as bloatware. In most cases, it was more than we wanted and wasn't always clear how it served a person buying the device. Engineering heaven, right? Put all the new ideas in. So I see what you mean here. So how are we approaching this one then?
Well, my favorite way to examine how the author Adam Brandenburg in the March and April issue of last year, Harvard Business Review, how he's thinking about what he's offering, but it's, I suspect, not evident to him. And then to put his offered ideas into a larger context so we can see what the options are, which I don't think he knew he could choose from, but give people better access to something I think more effective when it comes to what they're really trying to produce. Did anything, you said you looked at this clearly, what's struck you about it as you read and considered it?
Yeah. So as I was reading, it seems like the author tried to retroactively assign meanings to ideas without actually reading into the patterns that were actually driving them. This is a deductive process rather than inductive process, which we kind of touched on last time. So in one of his examples, SpaceX, Elon Musk has never actually publicly said anything about overturning major assumptions he had, you know, in relative to the goals he was trying to achieve with the business. He's talked extensively about first principles driving his approach to design, which the assumptions listed here are actually not first principles. So I assume we're going to examine how he used this same incomplete mindset to construct his 4Cs approach of contrast, combination, context, and constraint. Was that where we're headed today?
Well, yes, I am including that, but I want to put a larger context around this, a more complete way, I think, that will help us all assess strategy and consulting advice we get, especially when we say it's creativity, and those four natures of creativity, which may or may not lead to innovation. Some may even lead to industry disruption because they get lucky and strike right on the mark with what the consumer and user is after. But I think if we did a little more examination and see how they're giving increasingly better return on financial effects and for all the stakeholders, we have a better example in the game.
So before we get rolling here, let's shine a little light on what framework we're using to approach this for some context. Let's get our listeners working ahead of us. So it sounds like you are talking about different paradigms, but tied more specifically today to creativity and innovation. So our frequent listeners can start by asking, what is the base level of creativity process that will help us move up in these paradigms? We want you all to get something worth the effort here in order to follow along. Then, as we move up, what is the nature of creativity process that gives us this some boundaries to arrest the disorder or do better than last year and reduce loss from where we really got off course? And then if we move up again, how do you do good work? Many of our listeners can do that now for sure. But again, what does creativity process look like at each of these levels?
I really like that idea because we do have now a fairly large following, which thank you very much for joining us, and folks who tell me they're beginning to try and connect with what we're talking about and immediately see if they can get out a piece of paper and go to work. So I love that. For me, the most basic start to where creativity is usually launched out of the most fundamental or lowest level paradigm is brainstorming. And even though there's not an extensive explanation of that in this particular article, it really underlies pretty much every example they give of what they want people to go do to carry out their model. The base level here, instead of calling it extract value, we might call it, it's the same thing, but it's about having a liberty, being unstructured. That's what we think of brainstorming. It's how most companies that are smaller go about trying to be creative, get something new. Let's get in a group. You listen, you hear, you discuss. Sometimes it's a very small group of people can do that for a short period of time, and then they're off to work. They find something to resonate with. It often happens with just a few people or some consultants or some advisors, and then they pull together what they got out of it, and it becomes a de facto strategy, which was done creatively.
But even mid-sized companies do this, right, Carol? I mean, a group of people can come together around a shared problem or one they feel they have some sense of shared accountability for, and they end up offering some spontaneous ideas, which are then compiled for evaluation. And there's really no criticism or evaluation as you go along, as the intention is really to stop debates and get the imagination going. But there's so much research now showing it actually gives us very few new ideas, and the lack of discussion actually slows creativity down, not elevates it. So there's no consideration of any ideas as they're offered, coupled with very little real imagination.
You're absolutely right, Zach. They do offer a model here that is tested by the offerers, but what they're doing is aggregating from a bunch of things they see people did and interpreting it through a lens of the model they built. And there are some challenges to doing that. One is the minute you start working inductively, you've got no reference point. You're just starting with looking at activity, task, outcomes, and trying to find a way to aggregate something there that would looks something like a pattern, but it's after the fact, and especially when it's done without you being actively involved. Now, that's how models get built. How frameworks get built is they start with a underlying systematic understanding of the living systems process. For example, I work with one which has an indigenous history called the Seven First Principles. And first principles, as you commented earlier, is more how Elon Musk has described what he's doing, which is saying, what do we fundamentally think we know at this point? May move over time, but we think we know that, like the laws of gravity, which, of course, Einstein moved with quantum mechanics and quantum theory. But if you don't start with that, it's very hard to be creative. And they don't start with that. They start with activity and try and find a pattern and aggregate it. Secondly, when you do that, when you aggregate, you end up with things that are abstract and generic. In other words, they don't have anything to do with the real thing. If you went to any individual in the group or any group, they would not be able to relate to it. Well, they'd say, yeah, there's a little piece there, but it's not really relative to what we exactly did. And then the last thing is that there's no validation of the methods that are offered by the author, which seems to clearly suggest that they've done this all in the aftermath of the work. So they give us some exercises. Here, you can go do this too. But as I read them, they feel like a schoolroom exercise because you can tell that doing that would not get you to anything great. Go brainstorm about what it is that is a contrasting idea with what you're currently doing. The saddest part is you can tell they were never a part of any of the examples they offer. And they have no idea whether that was what the company did to achieve the story's outcomes that they're boasting about, or whether they selected the example to prove their case without any experience of it, maybe by interviewing, but certainly by their interpretation of it.
Here, they end up with a nice model based on the four C's of creativity and strategy work. Contrast, combinations, constraint, and context are their four C's. I remember from school that this is an inductive process, which is particularly deadly when you're doing interpretations using your model as a reference, without being involved or knowing actually what happened, followed by uncorrelated and uncorroborated stories to prove their point.
Yeah, and you get one of the worst outcomes you can get in a model building when you do this. And I think that may be my primary argument with their suggested model. You get abstractions that don't have any real clear use for real creativity and strategy, or even the processes of developing strategy that's useful to users or stakeholders. It's not effective to advance the lives of buyers or users and their engagement with the offerings that they're going to get from you. And none of the four C's start and end with the big C, the customer, consumer. They are just techniques for more ordered brainstorming, which was the most base level you can have for working on creativity, and then an artificial aggregating into a model.
So this is the same process that we've called attention to when creating or using market segmentations that separate people from their actual choices. It gives you nothing when you use the wrong starting point. Inductive model building leads to a common pattern, but one that's not based in real lives. And worse, it's done by predetermined categories in this case. When you do customer aggregating of this abstract nature, you use demographics most often and then make a tool based on that. Here, you have associations that can be drawn by what the surface outcome suggests. This is not really proven to relate to what you're thinking or experiencing at all. Again, they don't show you how the company they use as an example worked. They give you a simple brainstorming idea you can use based on their predetermined categories from the model.
Right, which we already talked about was the most basic level of paradigm. The other problem with this model, or with any model, is that it gives answers that are supposed to work in all situations forever and generically. This article even goes so far as to suggest that tools like the Harvard Michael Porter's five factors has never been outdated. Well, that's pretty easy. I don't think it was ever really anything but abstract. The author of the article and the model want you to add their model to your quiver, as they might see, and the techniques in order to get more creative when you're using Porter's five factors. It's hard to grasp, but even though they suggest that you're trying to get away from what currently exists, their techniques all draw on existence. So they study existence, for example, like look at the industry's gaps and fill it. In another case, they want you to borrow ideas currently in use, but by someone else or somewhere else in the ecosystem and put it in your system. Sure, they may be new, but they aren't necessarily creative. They're all about borrowing best practices, unproven to be correlated with the results they offer. And none of them are connected to the market of the persons who are reading and evolving and working with what you're providing. I mean, reading the article. They're not connected to their specific clients, users, or customers. They're all abstract. I could speak more on that, but I think we should go on to the next level of creative thoughts.
Good idea. Okay, so abstraction does seem to show up in each type of ideation they suggest, for sure. All are just suggestions, though, to disrupt thinking, with the implied assumption that something new and useful will pop up. For example, let's look at each of the four. So first is contrasting, the first C block. So step one, start with the assumptions in the industry, existence again. From this place, we cannot get beyond abstraction or become concrete unless you look at the real buyers you're serving and what they're counting on you for. That is real and a great source of creativity. Second, C, combine. I'm pretty sure this is not how Apple got to the alliance with Nike, as the article would lead you to believe, looking for whatever combination they could make with another huge, awesome company. This is a case built for the model after the fact, using the model. We know, Carol, from your work with Apple, as well as extensive research, that all their innovation comes from building integrated systems that are hard to crack into for a specific customer node that they know well and designed for specifically. This is starting to feel dangerously close to fraudulent to claim they prove your case. The real source of creativity was and is customers' lives, not a model of putting two things next to one another and drawing up a co-opetition agreement.
Yeah, well, that is why in all of my books where I cite stories, I only use case stories where I was involved. I'm not extrapolating. I am working with and close to it. And Zach, you're pointing to a poor choice of ways even beyond that to work on creativity, which is now organized in this nice model, which seems very tidy with its consonant defined pattern, right? C, 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 without customer, of course. It's missing the consumer experience, their future, and the eco-health of the system they exist in. To put the constraints, the 4C, into the ecological context almost seems artificial, and it's not connected to how real living systems work. I do value one thing I think is important out of what they said, although not how they went after it. Constraints, or we would say convert them into thinking of as restraints, but of course that's not a C word, is a source of creativity. We teach that, how you see restraints as what really is inviting you to be creative, but not in the abstract, but as using them as global imperatives that the impact affects, connecting on how nature and living systems work and how you're affecting those.
Well, I guess neither of us are real happy here with the model and the use of it. I guess it's time to go to the next level, but how do you even name that, Carol?
Ah, you're right. I'm not happy. In fact, why don't we do the next two levels together? Because they are working from the upper two paradigms and pulling forward work out of the do-good paradigm, which can be useful. I often refer to it as framework thinking and essence thinking. And there are two processes that are in the regenerative or living systems paradigm, which avoid the problem of brainstorming, the use of models, and to produce not just great creativity, but innovation, which leads to real meaning and new capacity for the buyers, users, and stakeholders.
So by framework thinking, you start with a reference we all agree on as a starting point to discover new ideas together. It's a process of consciously selecting and using a multi-term system to consider a given subject or idea. Kind of like putting on a set of glasses so that you can look at different aspects of something to try to understand its more fundamental working. As opposed to starting with an abstraction and trying to force fit things together into that category.
Yeah, and by that, I mean, if you think about that category, it it means we have to find where things fit. It's like a shell game. It's under one of them. But what a framework is doing is it's really providing the ability to be discerning, not replicating, not force fitting into the model. I mean, if you think about it, we've used worldviews before, where you can look at a machine worldview, a behavioral worldview, a human relations, or a living system. That lets us discern where we're working, not where something fits. A framework is all about working, not fitting. It gives us the opportunity to form better questions, where models give us answers to a common problem, which is supposed to be replicable because it's generic and it's ideal. In fact, you can then sell a certification to fit your model, which drives me crazy as I see companies do that. But what about essence thinking?
Yeah, so essence thinking increases innovation because it allows us to more deeply understand the lives of our customers and how they live nested within the world around them, from where they source their motivations and how they approach thinking about all of that. Without consciously moving to this level of thinking, we're left with a generic, abstract flattening of people into boxes.
Yeah. And by the way, essence, you did say for customers, but it's actually for anything alive. Everything alive has essence, which means nature doesn't replicate. But it requires you, in order to do essence thinking, to actually see it working and see it at its core, see it in its uniqueness, its way of being, contributing precisely from who you are. And you can understand the source and the motivation behind that being and the way they work and their unique life if what you can do is essence thinking. So, for example, there are no two children who are the same. Even twins, there's no two cities that are the same. No two life sheds or watersheds are the same. There's no typology we all fit into. And that is what essence thinking is about. When people say they threw away the mold when they made her, they mean she is living from her essence and not following some assumed ideal pattern or category, not by gender, not by age, not by ethnicity, not by any typology.
Wow. This is a pretty useful exploration of Adam Brandenburg's article on the 4 C's model of creativity. Although, as we said, one is not customer, surprisingly. So my takeaway is to engage in framework thinking, not mental models offered by experts and researchers. Engage essence thinking with a framework, which means you get to see the subject or a subject is alive and working with agency in the situation in which they're in, finding the heart or core that differentiates it. And as always, avoid brainstorming at every turn, folks. Thanks, Carol. So what should our listeners know about your world right now?
Well, yes, I'd love to catch people up. Thanks for asking about what's happening at Carol Sanford Institute and the regenerative business development community. If you'd like some better skills and capability in regenerative thinking with frameworks and essence thinking, which you can tell Zach and I love doing, then go check out the Regenerative Business Development Community under CarolSanfordInstitute.com website. It's under offerings. We're inviting some new non-consulting businesses to join us right now. I mean, we already have NUMMI, Seventh Generation, Rebel, Guayaki. You've heard us talking about who these amazing folks are, and there are several dozen more who are currently actively involved. They're working on being more precise and concrete and accelerating a creative process that's connected in a systemic way with customers and stakeholders' lives and passing on all that abstraction, market research, the using of models that put us to sleep. So come to learn to think with us, see past the models, join us to learn how to build a powerful, strategic, creative, but innovative thinking process.
And we should tell people also about the Regenerative Business Prize. Nominations are open, and reviewers and jury will be giving you reflections on your nomination should you submit for your business or someone else. So you get also some sessions from Carol too to understand better the rubric, and you also get to change or rewrite and upgrade your nomination in that process. It's $10,000 worth of education with Carol and the prize team that you can use to better run your business better.
Also, my new book, The Regenerative Life, is out in just a few days over a month. It's using 9 roles in society that, when played regeneratively, will change your understanding of how to change the course of history. It's from educators to economic shapers, spirit resources, parents, educators. And to do so in a non-heroic way. You can also get a good deal on buying bulk books and join book clubs. And there are many other ways to join us, from books to one of the new communities that are now being formed out of the new book, including women entrepreneurs.
And thanks to our sponsors, Guayaki, in your pursuit of regeneration with great integrity. And thanks to NumiT as they sponsor our show notes and the Regenerative Business Prize, as we mentioned. Don't forget to check out the Business Second Opinion website for more info on our show. And as always, join NumiT as a champion for the Regenerative Business Summit. This has been Business Second Opinion.